Now, an animated logo appears in three-dimensional gold letters. Fox Video. Spotlights on either side point skyward and wave back and forth. Another logo of a towering block of letters, 20th Century Fox. Hollywood spotlights crisscross their shining skyward beams. Now in black and white, a man saunters down a New York sidewalk with his back to us. Wearing a black Homburg hat and winter coat, he jauntily swings his arms and carries a simple wooden cane. He crosses the street, heading for the opposite corner. Titles appear. 20th Century Fox presents Maureen O'Hara as Doris and John Payne as Fred in Miracle on 34th Street. Also starring Edmund Gwenn as Chris, Jean Lockhart, Natalie Wood as Susan, Porta Hall, William Frawley, Jerome Cowan, and Philip Tong. Written for the screen by George Seaton. Story by Valentine Davies. Produced by William Perlberg. Directed by George Seaton. As the man continues to stroll, 40-style cars line either side of the busy street. Several pedestrians sweep past. One woman walks a small dog. Another peers at him with a curious glance. He turns a corner. Central Park looms ahead. The man walks up to a store window. Inside, a clerk arranges a model of Santa's sleigh, lining up six reindeer. The clerk glances up, eyes the man for a moment, then does a double take. We see the man clearly for the first time. In his 60s, he has a jolly face with crinkly eyes, plump cheeks, a thick mustache, and a full white beard. He smiles brightly at the clerk.
You've got them mixed up. You're making a mistake. You're making a mistake with a reindeer.
The clerk indicates he can't hear. The jolly-faced man approaches the door. It's locked.
Would you mind stepping out for a moment?
Open the door.
I'm sorry, the store isn't open today.
Oh, I don't want to buy anything, and I'm sorry to interrupt you in your work. But I wanted to tell you, you're making a rather serious mistake.
Huh?
With the reindeer, I mean. You've got Cupid where Blitzen should be. And Dasher. Oh, Dasher should be on my right-hand side.
He should, huh?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, and another thing. Donna's antlers are but 4 points instead of 3.
Still, I don't suppose anybody had noticed that except myself.
No, I don't suppose so. Well, bye.
Not at all.
Thanks.
Glad to have helped you. Bye.
The clerk shuts the door with a bug-eyed stare. Cocking his ear, a smile spreads across the older man's face. He saunters off. The clerk follows the man with his eyes. Now, a woman's hands flip open a newspaper to an ad reading, 10 a.m., Macy's Annual Thanksgiving Parade to Welcome Santa Claus. At the parade site, a man in a Santa Claus suit struggles with a whip on top of a float. Nearby, a pretty woman directs a group of clowns and costumed workers.
You're on the pilgrim float. You three, you're on the pirate float, and you follow the band.
Something's got to be done. That rub-a-dub-dub, three men in a tub float, just isn't big enough. We can get the butcher and the baker in, but the candlestick...
I'm awfully sorry, Mr. Shellhammer, but I've got enough to do to take care of the people.
Oh, dear, I was so hoping... George!
The woman studies a clipboard as Shellhammer rushes off. Several yards away, a policeman keeps the crowd in line. The jolly-faced man makes his way to the front, gazing up at the Christmas float. Atop a sleigh, Santa feebly flings his whip forward, getting it caught in the reins. Giving up, he climbs down and takes out a flask of whiskey. The jolly-faced man approaches.
I beg your pardon, sir. You seem to have got slightly mixed up with this whip of yours. Allow me, will you?
He takes the whip.
Quite simple, really. Don't mind if I show you, eh?
No, sir.
Now. See, it's all in the wrist. Yes, of course, it's hollow through, you know.
Is that so?
Yes, it's just like throwing a ball. If you were to... You've been drinking.
Oh, well, it's cold. A man's got to do something to keep warm.
You ought to be ashamed of yourself. Don't you realize that there are thousands of children lining the streets, waiting to see you? Children who've been dreaming of this moment for weeks? You're a disgrace to the tradition of Christmas, and I refuse to have you malign me in this fashion.
He approaches a clown.
Tell me, who's in charge of this parade? When you find out, you tell me. These pants are going to fall off in the middle of Columbus Circle.
Striding off, the jolly-faced man bumps into a drum majorette.
I beg your pardon. Could you tell me who's in charge here?
Yes, Mrs. Walker. There she is down there.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, you two ought to be over on 81st Street.
Mrs. Walker, one of the men in your parade is not fit to receive
my... What are you doing out of costume? Now get back and get dressed. Oh, I'm terribly sorry. I thought you were our Santa Claus.
Your Santa Claus is intoxicated.
Oh, no.
Yes, it's disgraceful.
How can you allow a man?
They head for the Christmas float.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle.
Stop that. What do you mean by drinking? You know it's not allowed.
The man's cold. A man's got to do something to keep warm.
I'll warm you. I ought to take this cane and...
And I ought to... somebody, Judy, and get some black coffee. Plenty of it.
Yes, of course.
Black with a little cream. Wake me up when the parade starts. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all day.
He lies down on the float. Mrs. Walker lightly slaps his face.
Shameful. Absolutely shameful.
Could you be Santa Claus? Have you had any experience?
Oh, a little.
Oh, please, you've got to help me out.
Madam, I am not in the habit of substituting for spurious Santa Clauses. No.
Oh, please.
No, I... Oh, well, the children mustn't be disappointed. All right, I'll do it.
Oh, good, thank you. Come on, right this way. Get that costume.
She snatches the hat off Santa's head, then dashes off. Clowns scurry over and quickly undress the drunken Claus, removing his black boots, then undoing his furry white-trimmed coat and pants. Later, the parade marches down Broadway. Crowds spill over the curbs as a float adorned with a giant American eagle glides past. Decked out in the Santa Claus suit, the jelly-faced man waves to the spectators from the float. Nearby, Mrs. Walker stuffs her hands in her coat pockets as Shellhammer rides up in the sidecar of a policeman's motorcycle.
Wonderful. He's the best we've ever had. He didn't need any padding.
What?
Padding. He didn't need any padding.
Oh.
Where did you find him?
Oh, I just turned round and there he was.
I'm glad you turned round. I mean, I'm glad he was there.
Just think if Mr. Macy had seen the other one.
Just think if Mr. Gimble had seen the other one.
You going to ride in a motorcycle or a car?
No, I'm going to go home and get in a hot tub, and I might stay there until next Thanksgiving.
Oh, you really should see the parade you worked so hard on.
Oh, if I want to, which I doubt. I can see it from the roof of my apartment.
Well, that's right. You live down with it. Mrs. Walker!
He gapes in shock as she pulls out Santa's flask. Tipping his hat, the mustached, weak-chinned Shellhammer rides away. Gliding down Broadway, the Christmas float brings up the rear of the parade. The new Santa smiles and waves heartily from the sleigh, led by wooden reindeer. Several blocks away, the porcelain-skinned, fine-boned Mrs. Walker fights her way through the crowd to the door of her apartment building. Puffing out her cheeks, she pushes back her hat, then enters. Inside, she unlocks the door of her apartment.
Susan!
Dropping her keys on a small table, she finds several telephone messages.
Susan!
She enters a kitchen and greets an attractive black woman stuffing a turkey.
Hello, Cleo. Hello, Mrs. Walker.
Mm, what a beauty. Where's Susan?
She's watching the parade.
Oh, where? With whom?
With that Mr. Gailey who lives in the front apartment.
Oh, yes.
A nearby window looks into the opposite apartment.
Oh, I've been keeping an eye on her.
She can see everything from there. That's the 50-yard line.
He's so very fond of Susan. When he asked me, well, I didn't think you'd mind.
Well, I guess it's all right. I'll go on in a minute.
In Mr. Gailey's apartment.
Looks like they're having a little trouble with the baseball player.
He was a clown last year. They just changed the head and painted him different. My mother told me. Mm.
They eye a huge balloon.
He certainly is a giant, isn't he?
Not really. There are no giants, Mr. Gailey.
Well, maybe not now, Susie, but in olden days there were a lot of...
The little girl shakes her head.
Well, what about the giant that Jack killed?
Jack? Jack who?
Jack. Jack. Jack and the Beanstalk.
I never heard of that.
You must have heard of that. You've just forgotten. It's a fairy tale.
Oh, one of those. I don't know any fairy tales.
Oh, your mother and father must have told you a fairy tale.
No, my mother thinks they're silly. I don't know whether my father thinks they're silly or not. I never met my father. You see, my father and mother were divorced when I was a baby.
His mouth hangs agape.
Well, that baseball player certainly looks like a giant to me.
People sometimes grow very big, but that's abnormal.
I'll bet your mother told you that, too.
She nods. The tall, handsome, dark-haired Gailey rises and walks to the door.
Hello, I'm Susan's mother.
Yes, I know. Won't you come in? Susie's told me quite a lot about you. I'm Fred Gailey.
Yes, I know. Susan's told me quite a lot about you, too.
Hello, Mother.
Hello, dear.
They embrace.
Oh!
Won't you have a cup of coffee? You must be half frozen standing.
Oh, don't bother.
Oh, it's no bother already.
Well, in that case, thanks. What do you think of my parade?
It's much better than last year's.
Well, I hope Mr. Macy agrees with you.
Sugar? Cream? Both? Either?
Just one sugar, please.
She walks over to him in the kitchen.
This is very kind of you, Mr. Gailey.
Sit down.
And I want to thank you for being so kind to Susan. Cleo tells me that you took them to the zoo yesterday.
That's right. But I must confess it's part of a deep-dyed plot. I'm fond of Susie, very fond. But I also want to meet you. I read someplace that the surest way to meet the mother is to be kind to the child.
What a horrible trick.
It worked.
There goes Santa Claus.
Oh, don't even mention the name.
He's much better than last year's. At least this one doesn't wear glasses.
This one was a last-minute substitute. The one I hired, I fired.
Why?
You remember the way the janitor was last New Year's?
Oh, yes.
Well, this one was much worse.
Oh. I see she doesn't believe in Santa Claus either. No Santa Claus, no fairy tales, no fantasies of any kind. Is that it?
That's right. I think we should be realistic and completely truthful with our children and not have them growing up believing in a lot of legends and myths like Santa Claus, for example.
I see.
That's the end. The acrobats were good.
They ought to be at those prices. Thanks for the coffee.
And thank you for inviting me in.
It was a pleasure, Missy.
Mother, I was thinking, we've got such a big turkey for dinner, and there are only two of us. Couldn't we invite Mr. Gailey? Couldn't we?
Well...
Oh, don't even think about it. I'll have a sandwich or something.
It's an awful big turkey.
That's not it, dear, but I'm sure Mr. Gailey has other plans.
No, he hasn't. Have you?
To be quite honest and truthful with the child, I must admit I haven't any other plans.
Please, Mother, please.
Well,
did I ask all right?
Doris Walker shoots him a sly, knowing look.
Didn't I ask all right, Mr. Gailey?
That all depends.
Dinner's at 3.
Thanks. Susie, honey, you asked just right. I'll see you at 3.
You worked.
Yes.
Later, in the offices of Macy's, Shellhammer grips a telephone.
I tell you, Mrs. Walker, he's stupendous. Everybody's crazy about him. So is Mr. Macy.
Well, hire him by all means. It's perfectly all right with me. As a matter of fact, it'll save me a frantic search in the morning.
Doris shuts Susan's piano.
Yes, that's right.
All right, I'll take care of it as soon as he gets through. Oh, you'll love him. I just know that with that man on the throne, my department will sell more toys than it ever has. He's a born salesman. I just feel it.
Yes, yes, yes. We'll talk about it in the morning. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
In the street below, Santa waves to a crowd of thousands.
Toys of all kinds and Macy's.
The next day, inside the department store locker room, the new Macy's Santa puts on a fancy costume. A similar one hangs on a locker door. A plump teenaged boy comes over, sweeping with a broom.
Gee, that sure is an elegant costume.
Yes, I've had it for years. And years.
Sure makes a bum out of the one they gave you. But even that one's better than the one I wear.
You, Alfred?
Yeah, I play Santa Claus over at the Y near our block, see?
No kidding.
Started about 3 years ago. They had a costume, but, well, it didn't have no padding, and since I carry my own padding around with me, I got the job, see?
You enjoy impersonating me?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
I don't know. It's when I give packages to little kids, I like to watch their faces get that Christmas look all of a sudden. It makes me feel kind of good and important.
Santa nods with a knowing look. Several yards away, workers dressed in suits stream out of an elevator into the locker room. Among the crowd, Shellhammer glances around anxiously, peeking down aisles.
There you are. There you are.
Good morning. Good
morning. Now before... Oh, my, what a striking costume. Before you go up on the floor, I just want to give you a few tips on how to be a good Santa Claus.
Go right ahead.
Well, here's a list of toys that we have to push, you know. Things that we're overstocked on. Now, you'll find that a great many children will be undecided as to what they want for Christmas. When that happens, you immediately suggest one of these items. You understand?
I certainly do.
Good. Now, you memorize that list and I'll... I'll tell you. When you've finished, come up to the seventh floor. I'll be waiting for you.
Imagine. Making a child take something it doesn't want. Just because he bought too many of the wrong toys. That's what I've been fighting against for years, the way they commercialize Christmas.
He rips the list.
There's a lot of bad isms floating around this world, but one of the worst is commercialism. Make a buck, make a buck. Even in Brooklyn, it's the same. Don't care what Christmas stands for, just make a buck.
Santa reaches for the other costume.
Oh, don't bother, I'll put it away for you.
Huh? Oh, thank you, Alfred.
He holds out the ripped pieces.
And what should I do with these?
Throw them on a floor. I get kind of tired just sweeping up dust.
Santa gleefully drops them.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Alfred.
Now, at the Santa Claus display, the jolly-faced man sits on a throne with a boy on his knee.
Yes, yes. Peter's a fine name. What do you want for Christmas, Peter?
I want a fire engine just like the big ones. Only smaller has a rose. It's good to throw at one and I won't do it in the house. I'll only do it in the backyard. I promise.
His mother shakes her head no at Santa.
Macy's ain't got me. Nobody's got me.
Well, Peter, I can tell you're a good boy. You'll get your fire engine.
Oh, thank you very much. You see? I told you he'd get me one.
That's fine. That's just dandy. Listen, you wait over there. Mama wants to thank Santa Claus, too. Say, listen, what's the matter with you? Don't you understand English? I tell you, Macy's ain't got me. Nobody's got me. I've been all over. My feet are killing me. Fine thing, promising the kid.
Now, you don't think I would have said that unless I was sure, do you? You can get those fire engines at Schoenfeld's on Lexington Avenue. Only $8.50, a wonderful bargain.
Schoenfeld's? I don't get it.
Oh, I keep track of the toy market pretty closely. Does that surprise you, sir?
Surprise me? Macy, sending people to the store. You kidding me?
Well, the only important thing is to make the children happy. And whether Macy or somebody else sells a toy doesn't make any difference. Don't you feel that way?
Huh? Oh, me? Oh, yeah, sure. Only I didn't know Macy's did.
Well, as long as I'm here, they do.
I don't get it. No? I just don't get it.
Shaking her head in dismay, she walks off. Shellhammer strolls over to the display. Stroking his chin, he eyes the crowd with a satisfied look. Shiny, metallic snowflakes hang from the ceiling. Toys, stuffed animals, and wooden reindeer rest near the throne. Shellhammer sidles up to it and listens in as Santa cradles a girl in his lap.
I understand. Your little girl would like some skates. But of course you must get her the best, because they're little ankles, you know, they want protecting. Now, we've got skates, and they're very good, too, but they're not quite good enough. You go to Gimble's. They'll have exactly what you're looking for, I'm sure. There you are.
Gimble's.
Shellhammer's chin drops. With a stunned look, he clenches his fists, walks off, then turns back. The beleaguered mother approaches, dragging packages and her little boy.
Pardon me, the guard said I should speak to you. You're the head of the toy department, huh?
Yes, madam, but at the moment
Well, listen, I want to congratulate you and Macy's on this wonderful new stunt you're pulling. Imagine sending people to other stores. I don't get it. Why, it's...
It certainly is.
You said it. Imagine a big outfit like Macy's putting the spirit of Christmas ahead of the commercial. It's wonderful. Well, I'll tell you, I never done much shopping here before, but I'll tell you one thing. From now on, I'm going to be a regular Macy customer. All right, dear.
Thank you, madam.
Later in his office, he rubs his head as a secretary enters.
There are six more women out there who want to thank you.
Not now. I've got to think this thing over.
Well, personally, I think it's a wonderful idea, too.
You think so? Those women think so. The point is, will Mr. Macy think so?
Now, Fred Gailey and Susan wait in line.
This seems awfully silly, Mr. Gailey.
Well, I thought as long as we're in the store, you might as well say hello to Santa Claus.
Why?
Because when you talk to him, you might feel differently about him.
She shoots him a look of disbelief. Moments later, it's their turn.
Goodbye, Elmer. You're a good boy now. Merry Christmas. Well, young lady, what's your name?
Susan Walker. What's yours?
Mine? Kris Kringle. I'm Santa Claus.
She smirks.
Oh, you don't believe that, do you?
Mm-mm. You see, my mother's Mrs. Walker, the lady who hired you.
Oh.
But I must say, you're the best-looking one I've ever seen.
Really?
Your beard doesn't have one of those things that goes over your ears.
Well, that's because it's real. Just like I'm really Santa Claus. Oh, go ahead. Pull it.
She gives it a good tug. Susan's mouth drops open. Doris Walker approaches, beaming. Her grin fades when she spies her daughter with Santa. She marches over.
And now, what would you like me to bring you for Christmas?
Nothing, thank you.
Oh, come now, you must want something.
Whatever I want, my mother will get for me. If it's sensible and doesn't cost too much, of course. Hello, Mother.
Hello, Susan. Hello, Mr. Gailey. I think you've taken up enough with this gentleman's time now. Come along, dear.
The explanation for this is all very simple. Cleo's mother sprained her ankle. She had to go home, so she asked me to bring Susie down to you.
Yes, I know. Cleo called me. I've been wondering where you were.
Well, I thought as long as we're here, we might as well say hello to Santa Claus.
He's a nice old man, Mother. And those whiskers are real, too.
Yes, yes, dear. Many men have long beards like that. Susan, would you stand over here a minute? I want to talk to Mr. Gailey.
I shouldn't have brought Susie to see Santa Claus, huh?
Now you're making me feel like the proverbial stepmother.
Well, I'm sorry, but it's just that I couldn't see any harm in just saying hello to the old fellow.
But I think there is harm. I tell her Santa Claus is a myth, and you bring her down here, and she sees hundreds of gullible children, meets a very convincing old man with real whiskers. This sets up a very harmful mental conflict within her. What is she going to think? Whom is she going to believe?
The pretty brown-eyed Susan sneaks back to the display.
And by filling them full of fairy tales, they grow up considering life a fantasy instead of a reality. They keep waiting for Prince Charming to come along. And when he does, he turns out to be a...
We were talking about Susie, not about you.
Well, whether you agree or not, I must ask you to respect my wishes regarding Susan. She's my responsibility, and I must bring her up as I see fit.
Okay.
Pursing his lips, Fred watches her head back to the display. He puts on his fedora and leaves.
Say thank you, Santa Claus.
Thank you.
Bye. Merry Christmas.
A pigtailed girl is next.
Well, young lady, and what's your name?
I'm sorry, she doesn't speak English. She's Dutch. She just came over. She's been living in an orphan's home in Rotterdam ever since... Well, we've adopted her. I told her you wouldn't be able to speak to her. But when she saw you in the parade yesterday, she said you were Santa Claus, as she calls you. And you could talk to her. Well, I didn't know what to do.
Hello. Ich bin blij, dass ihr gekommen bent.
Oh, Ben Santa Claus.
Ja, sicher.
Ich wüsste, Bill. Ich war sicher, dass du uns selber greifen.
Natürlich. Sag mal, was ihr so willen haben, Ben Santa Claus.
Nix. Ich hab von alles. Ich will allein mal bei dieser liebe Dame sein.
Will ihr mal nur mehr singen?
Sinterklaas kapoentje, geef het in mijn schoentje, geef het in mijn laarsje. Dank u, Sinterklaasje.
Wide-eyed, Susan studies them as Santa rocks the girl in his lap.
Geef wat in mijn laarsje, dank u, Sinterklaasje.
Later.
Now do you understand?
Yes, I see what you mean, Mother.
Good.
But when he spoke Dutch to that girl, he was so...
Susan, I speak French, but that doesn't make me Joan of Arc. What I'm trying to explain to you is, come in.
You said you wanted to see me, Mrs. Walker.
Come right in.
Hello there. Good to see you again.
It's nice to see you.
You're awfully lucky, Mrs. Walker. Lovely little girl you have here.
Thank you. And Susan's the reason I asked you to drop down. She's a little confused, and I thought maybe you could help to straighten her out.
I'd be glad to.
Would you please tell her that you're not really Santa Claus? That there actually is no such person?
Well, I'm sorry to disagree with you, Mrs. Walker, but not only is there such a person, but here I am to prove it.
No, no, no. You misunderstand. I want you to tell her the truth. What's your name?
Kris Kringle. I'll bet you're in the first grade.
Second.
I mean your real name.
That is my real name. Second grade?
It's a progressive school. Oh,
Doris opens a door to a secretary's office.
May I have this gentleman's employment card, please?
Yes, Mrs. Walker.
This dress is very cute. Where did you get such a lovely outfit?
Here at Macy's. We get 10% off.
Please don't feel that you have to keep pretending for Susan's benefit. She's a very intelligent child and always wants to know the absolute truth.
Good, because I always tell the absolute truth. Now, about your school, what's the name of your teacher?
Mrs. Haney.
Mrs. Haney.
Here it is, Mrs. Walker. Thank you.
The typewritten card reads, Name, Chris Kringle. Address, Brooks Memorial Home for the Aged. Date of birth, as old as my tongue and a little bit older than my teeth. Place, North Pole. Next of kin, Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, Vixen, Comet, Cupid, Donder, Blitzen. As she reads, Doris's eyebrows shoot up.
Susan, dear, would you go out and talk to Miss Adams for a minute, and I'll be right with you?
All right. Goodbye.
Goodbye, young lady. Hope to see you again.
Thank you. I hope so, too. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I'm sorry, Mr.
Kringle.
I'm sorry, but we're going to have to make a change.
Change?
The Santa Claus that we had 2 years ago is back in town, and I feel that we owe it to
have
him.
Have I done something wrong?
Oh, no, no. Yes.
Mr. Macy wants to see you immediately.
I'll be right up. Would you sit down, and I'll be right back and sign your pay voucher.
Upstairs, she approaches the secretary's desk.
Go right in, Mr. Macy's waiting.
She enters an executive office suite.
That this will have on the public is... Oh, come in, Mrs. Walker.
Hello, Mrs. Walker.
Hello, Mrs. Walker.
My seats. Sit over here.
I have just been telling these gentlemen of the new policy you and Mr. Shellhammer initiated. I can't say that I approve of your not consulting the advertising department first, but in the face of this tremendous response on the part of the public, I can't be angry with you.
Shellhammer quiets Doris.
Now to continue, gentlemen. I admit that on the face of it, this plan sounds idiotic and impossible. Imagine Macy's Santa Claus sending customers to Gimbel's. Oh, but gentlemen, you cannot argue with success. Look at this. Telegrams, messages, telephone calls, the governor's wife, the mayor's wife, over 500 thankful parents expressing undying gratitude to Macy's. Never in my entire career have I seen such a tremendous and immediate response to a merchandising policy. I'm positive, Frank, that if we expand our policy, we'll expand our results as well. Therefore, from now on, not only will our Santa Claus continue in this manner, but I want every salesperson in this store to do precisely the same thing. If we haven't got exactly what the customer wants, we'll send him where he can get it. No high pressuring and forcing a customer to take something he doesn't really want.
But after all, Mr.
We'll be known as the helpful store, the friendly store, the store with a heart, the store that places public service ahead of profits. And consequently, we'll make more profits than ever before. Oh, yes, I know it's late and we're all tired and we want to go to dinner, so we'll continue the first thing in the morning. In the meantime, you fellas get together and figure out the best way to promote this thing.
We'll do that. Good night, R.H.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, R.H.
Good night. Good night. I want to thank you two again, and in your Christmas envelopes, you'll find a more practical expression of my gratitude.
Thank you, Mr. Macy.
And tell that Santa Claus I won't forget him either.
Yes, Mr. Macy.
They nod at the gray-haired, bespectacled Macy, then exit.
Imagine! A bonus! He just assumed it was our idea, so I didn't... What's the matter?
I fired him.
Who?
Santa Claus.
What?
He's crazy. He thinks he is Santa Claus.
Why, I don't care if he thinks he's Easter Bunny. You've got to get him back.
He's insane, I tell you. We'll just have to hire somebody else and have him do the same thing.
Oh, no. No, you heard what Mr. Macy said. We've got to keep him.
But what if he should have a sudden fit or something? Oh, no, no. I've got to tell Mr. Macy.
But maybe he's only a little crazy, like painters or composers or some of those men in Washington. We can't be sure until he's been examined. If you fire him, and then we find out that he wasn't really crazy, Mr. Macy will have us examined and fired.
I suppose we ought to be sure. We could have Mr. Sawyer talked to him.
Of course. He's a psychologist. That's what he's paid for, to examine employees. Now, until we get his report, we won't say a word.
I'll get in touch with him right away.
Yeah, but first, get that Santa Claus back. The examination won't be worth a thing without the patient.
Later.
It was just because I felt that we owed it to him, but Mr. Macy suggested that we find something else for the other Santa Claus, and keep you on by all means.
Oh, well, thanks. That's mighty good news.
Yes.
You'll be here in the morning, then?
Certainly I will. You see, Mrs. Walker, this is quite an opportunity for me. For the past 50 years or so, I've been getting more and more worried about Christmas. Seems we're all so busy trying to beat the other fellow in making things go faster and look shinier and cost less that Christmas and I are sort of getting lost in the shuffle.
Oh, I don't think so. Christmas is still Christmas.
Oh, Christmas isn't just a day. It's a frame of mind. And that's what's been changing. That's why I'm glad I'm here. Maybe I can do something about it. And I'm glad I met you and your daughter. You two are a test case for me.
We are?
Yes, you're sort of the whole thing in miniature. If I can win you over, there's still hope. If not, then I guess I'm through. But I'm warning you, I don't give up easily. Good night.
Good night. Oh, Mr. Kringle,
yeah?
The first thing in the morning, would you report to Mr. Sawyer's office?
Sawyer?
Yes, he'll just give you a little examination. Oh, we do it with all our employees.
A mental examination?
Well,
I don't mind. I've taken dozens of them. Never failed one yet. Know them by heart. How many days in the week?
7.
How many fingers do you see?
4.
Muscular coordination test.
Arms extended, he touches the tip of his nose with each hand.
No damage to the nervous system. Who was the first president of the United States? George Washington. Who was the vice president under John Quincy Adams? Daniel D. Tompkins, and I'll bet your Mr. Sawyer doesn't know that. Good night.
As Kris Kringle exits, Doris follows him with her eyes. She furrows her brow for a moment, glances at his employee card, then pushes a button on a nearby telephone and picks it up.
Miss Adams, would you get me the Brooks Memorial Home in Great Neck? It's a home for old people. That's right. I want to talk to the doctor in charge.
Daytime. In an office, Kris sits across from a short, mustached man who nervously tugs one bushy eyebrow.
How many days in the week?
7.
Who was the first president of the United States?
George Washington.
How much 3 times 5?
Oh, you asked me that before. You'll find the answer right there at the bottom of the...
I am conducting this examination. How much is 3 times 5?
Well, the same as it was before. 15.
The man rubs his eyebrow.
You're rather nervous, aren't you, Mr. Sawyer? Do you get enough sleep?
My personal habits are of no concern to you.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's just that I hate to see someone tied up in...
How many fingers do you see?
3. Oh, you bite your nails, too.
Sawyer snatches his hand away.
Now, I want you to stand with your feet together and your arms extended. Then I want you to...
Muscular coordination test? Surely. Be glad to.
Swinging his arms, he touches his nose.
You know, sometimes the cause of nervous habits like yours is not obvious. No. Often they're the result of an insecurity. Are you happy at home, Mr. Sawyer?
That will be all, Mr. Kringle. The examination's over. You may go.
Thank you.
You may go out that way.
At the door, Kris grabs his hat, coat, and cane.
And it may interest you to know that I've been happily married for 26 years.
Really? Delighted to hear it. Goodbye.
Kris tips his cane, then leaves. Sawyer reaches for a phone.
Get me Mrs. Walker.
Yes, sir. And your wife's on 672. She says it's very important.
The secretary tugs her eyebrow.
Agnes, how many times have I told you not to bother me at the office? No, not a penny. I give you a liberal allowance, and it's up to you to run the house on it. If that fat, stupid brother of yours would get a job, you wouldn't have to be pestering me all the time. Mrs. Walker... I'd like to talk to you right away about this Kringle fellow.
Oh, yes. Dr. Pierce from the Brooks home is here and would be a good time to settle the whole matter. Sorry, Doctor, but that was Mr. Sawyer, the gentleman I was telling you about.
Oh, yes.
He'll be right in. He's just down the hall. I can't tell you how we appreciate your giving us your time, Doctor.
Not at all. As a matter of fact, I was going to call you today. I had a feeling along about now you people would be wondering about Kris.
Oh, Dr. Pierce, Mr. Sawyer.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Mrs. Walker. After giving this man a comprehensive examination, it's my considered opinion he should be dismissed immediately.
Really? He failed to pass the examination?
Yes.
He didn't answer the questions correctly?
Well, yes, he did, but there was complete lack of concentration. He kept changing the subject. He was even questioning me. I don't think there's any doubt about it. He should be placed in a mental institution.
Oh, I don't agree, Mr. Sawyer. People are only institutionalized to prevent them from harming themselves or other people. Now, Mr. Kringle is incapable of either. His is a delusion for good. He only wants to be friendly and helpful.
That's what I feel, too.
Why, there are thousands of people walking around with similar delusions, living perfectly normal lives in every other respect. A famous example is that fellow, I can't think of his name, but for years he's insisted he's a Russian prince. Now, there's been all kinds of evidence to prove him wrong, but nothing has shaken his story. Is he in an institution? No. He owns a famous restaurant in Hollywood and is a highly respected citizen.
Dr. Pierce, I've made a great study of abnormal psychology, and I've found from experience that when a fixed delusion is challenged, the deluded is apt to become violent.
I'm afraid I'll have to disagree with you again, Mr. Sawyer.
But I...
If you tell Chris there is no Santa Claus, I grant you he'll argue the point, but he'll not become violent.
His whole manner suggests aggressiveness. Look at the way he carries that cane. And he's never without it.
Well, I know Chris always carries a cane, but surely you're not implying he'd use the cane as a weapon.
Mrs. Walker, naturally I can't discharge this man. That's up to you. But you ask for my opinion, and I've given it to you. So when he exhibits his latent maniacal tendencies, which I assure you he will, please realize the responsibility is completely yours.
With a curt nod, he leaves. The cleft-chinned Dr. Pierce turns to Doris.
Speaking of delusions...
Now we're right back where we started.
No, we're not. After listening to Dr. Pierce, I feel perfectly confident.
Yes, but if anything happens, you won't get blamed. I will.
Mrs. Walker, nothing's going to happen. And please don't feel that what I have said was prompted by my affection for Chris. My specialty is geriatrics.
Huh?
The treatment of the diseases of old age. I've had quite a bit of experience, and I assure you, Chris has no latent maniacal tendencies. Well, you'll probably want to discuss this with Mr. Shellhammer, so I'll be on my way. May I see Chris?
Why, certainly, Doctor. Use the employee's elevator. It's much quicker.
It's the same one you came up.
Well, now, where is that? I'm a little twisted.
I'll show you, Doctor.
That isn't necessary. I'll find my way.
You understand my position, Doctor. If there's the slightest possibility of his becoming violent or getting into any trouble, I couldn't possibly...
What trouble could he get into?
All that's got to happen is for a policeman to ask him his name. A big argument? Clang, clang, Bellevue.
Well, you can prevent that very simply. There must be someone here at the store who could rent a room out to him. Then they could both ride to and from work together. I'd just as soon he didn't take that long train ride out to Great Neck twice a day.
That'd solve everything. If someone was within, they could steer him away from any trouble.
You mean sort of take custody of him? Do you think he'd agree to that?
I'll talk to him. I'm sure he will.
In that case, he can stay.
Good. Thank you.
It's the 7th floor, Doctor, and thank you very much.
Right.
Pierce steps inside an elevator. It closes.
Well, sure, you've made a wise decision. Now, let's see. Who could rent him a room?
You?
Well, I...
Your son's away at school. What about his room?
Well, I don't mind. I'd be glad to. But I'm positive Mrs. Shellhammer wouldn't like it. She's a little... Say, I have an idea. We always have martinis before dinner. I'll make them double strength tonight. I'll bet after a couple of them, she'll be more receptive to the idea.
But Chris is through work at 6 o'clock. What about the in-between time?
You take him home to dinner, and I'll call you as soon as my wife's past feeling gay.
Oh, no,
now,
I'm
really,
never...
Mrs. Walker, if I am willing to let my wife have a big headache in the morning, the least you can do is to have a little headache tonight.
All right.
Later, at the Walkers, Susan shows Chris her coloring book.
Oh, good. Very good. But what sort of games do you play with the other children in the apartment building here?
I don't play much with them. They play silly games.
They do?
Like today, they were in the basement playing zoo and all of them were animals. When I came down, Homer, he was supposed to be the zookeeper, he said, "What kind of an animal are you?" And I said, "I'm not an animal. I'm a girl." And he said, "Only animals allowed here. Goodbye." So he came upstairs.
Why didn't you tell him you were a lion or a bear?
Because I'm not a bear or a lion.
Yes, but the other children were only children, and they were pretending to be animals.
That's what makes the game so silly.
Oh, I don't think so. Sounds like a wonderful game to me. Of course, in order to play it, you've got to have an imagination. Do you know what the imagination is?
Oh, sure, that's when you see things, but they're not really there.
Well, that can be caused by other things, too. No, to me, the imagination is a place all by itself, a separate country. Now, you've heard of the French nation, the British nation. Well, this is the imagination. It's a wonderful place. How would you like to be able to make snowballs in the summertime, eh? Or drive a great big bus right down Fifth Avenue? How would you like to have a ship all to yourself that makes daily trips to China and Australia? How would you like to be the Statue of Liberty in the morning and in the afternoon fly south with a flock of geese.
She nods with wide, bright eyes.
It's very simple. Of course, it takes practice. Now, the first thing you've got to learn is how to pretend. And the next time Homer says, what kind of animal are you? You tell him you're a monkey.
But I don't know how to be a monkey.
Sure you do. Here, I'll show you. Now, just bend your body over a little like that. Let your arms hang loose, see? Now, put your right hand up here under the air.
Her armpit.
Right. Now, scratch yourself, see? Mm-hmm. That's right. Now then, put the tongue under your lip over your teeth. Now then, scratch yourself and chatter, see?
In the kitchen, Fred and Doris fix dinner.
On the contrary, Haslip, Sherman, McKinsley, and Haslip have been very kind to me. But being exceptional lawyer, I want to open my own office.
Would you put this in Susan's place for me, please?
I think you can take the meat out. It should be done.
He takes a glass of milk into the living room. Chris and Susan stand in front of a mirror, making monkey faces.
Talk to the other monkeys.
What's going on here?
Oh. We're just having our first lesson in pretending.
Oh,
doing quite well at it, too. Now, that's right. Go on now. Call the other monkeys.
Fred turns to the kitchen with a sly, thoughtful look.
Mr. Kringle? Mrs. Walker just happened to mention that they're looking for a room for you here in town.
That's right. Dr. Pierce doesn't want me to make that long trip every day.
Well, I was just thinking, I'm all alone in my apartment. Twin beds, plenty of room. If you'd like to move in with me, I'd be only too happy to have you.
Well, that's awfully nice of you.
You could ride to and from work every day with Mrs. Walker and...
Yes. Give me a chance to really talk things over with her. Mm. Now, don't forget to scratch. You're not scratching. You're not... Besides, I can see Susie now and then. Yeah. Mr. Gailey, it's a deal.
Good. We'll drive out after dinner and get your things.
Hey.
Hello? Oh, yes, just a moment. It's a Mr. Shellhammer.
Thanks. Hello? Hello, Mr. Shellhammer.
Yes, just a moment. Mrs. Shellhammer wants to talk to you. I've made the martinis triple strength, and she feels wonderful. Here, I bet.
Hello?
She grips the receiver upside down.
Hello?
No, dear.
Thank you, darling.
It's still upside down.
Hello?
No, dear.
Oh, darling, how silly of me. Hello?
Doris cringes.
Why, we'd love to have Santa Claus come and stay with us. I think it would be simply charming.
Oh, and so do I, Mrs. Shellhammer. Just a moment. It's Mrs. Shellhammer, and they have the loveliest room, and they'd be so happy if you'd stay with them.
That's very sweet of them. Please thank them very much, but I'm going to stay with Mr. Gailey.
Mr. Gailey?
I think I'd better get the meat.
Later, in Susan's bedroom.
Yes, I understand that, but there must be something you want for Christmas, something you haven't even told your mother about, eh? Oh, come on now. Why don't you give me a chance?
Well...
She reaches into a dresser beside her bed, pulls out a wrinkled magazine clipping, and hands it to Chris. It shows a drawing of a colonial-style house with a sloped, shingled roof, rubble stone face, and white trim. A narrow path leads to the front door.
That's what I want for Christmas.
You mean a doll's house like this?
No, a real house. If you're really Santa Claus, you can get it for me. And if you can't, you're only a nice man with a white beard like Mother said.
Now, wait a minute, Susie. Just because every child can't get his wish, that doesn't mean there isn't a Santa Claus.
That's what I thought you'd say.
No, but don't you see, dear? Some children wish for things they couldn't possibly use, like real locomotives or B-29s.
But this isn't like a locomotive or a B-29.
It's awful big for a little girl like you. What could you possibly do with a house like this?
Live in it with my mother.
But you've got this lovely apartment.
I don't think it's lovely. I want a backyard with a great big tree to put a swing on and...
His eyes shift worriedly.
I guess you can't get it, huh?
I didn't say that. No.
He eyes her for a moment then leans back with a nod.
Well, it's a tall order, but I'll do my best. May I keep this picture?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Good night, sir.
Good night, Mr. Crinkle.
He kisses her forehead, wags his finger at her, then walks out. Alone, Susan lies in bed, chomping a wad of gum. Sticking out her tongue, she blows a giant bubble. She pulls open a drawer, takes out a small box, and opens it up. Inside rests a piece of aluminum foil. Susan unwraps it, takes out her gum, and places it inside. Closing the box, she sticks it back in the drawer and clicks off a nearby lamp. Now in Fred's apartment, Chris stands in the bedroom wearing a long nightshirt, his plump belly slightly protruding. Gazing at Susan's clipping, he scratches his head, then glances over his shoulder. In the bathroom, Fred, dressed in pajamas, brushes his teeth. Chris folds up the picture and sets it down with a bright smile.
Nice place you got here.
Oh, we're very lucky to get it.
You like living in Manhattan?
Well, it's all right. Of course, someday I'd like to get a place on Long Island. Not a big house, just one of those junior partner deals around Manhasset.
I know just the kind of place you mean. One of those little colonial houses.
Mm-hmm. Either that or Cape Cod.
Yeah.
You know, I think you're right about Mrs. Walker. A little more effort on your part, and she might crawl out of that shell. Take her out to dinner in the theater.
I've tried that. She's always too busy with her job.
Whoa, try a little harder. Those two are a couple of lost souls, and it's up to us to help them. I'll take care of Susie if you'll take care of her mother.
It's a deal.
Ready?
Ah, no, you don't. I'm not going to be cheated this way. All my life I've wanted something, and now's my chance to find out. I'm going to find the answer to a question that's puzzled the world for centuries. Does Santa Claus sleep with his whiskers outside or in?
Always sleeping them out. Cold air makes them grow.
In bed, he tucks the blanket under his beard. Daytime at Macy's.
Joe, we're running out of books.
I'll get some for you right away.
And I need some more Wanamakers.
In a busy advertising office, workers paste ads from other stores into a large book, about the size of a cookie sheet. Clippings from Bloomingdale's, Hearn's, Gimbel's, Stern's, and McCreary are neatly glued in, then smoothed out. Its bound cover reads, R.H. Macy & Company. Shopping guide for the convenience of our customers. Later, a salesman shows it to a shopper.
Yes, I know just what you want. We don't carry that brand, but I think Gimbel's does. Let me see. Yes, here it is. I thought I noticed it before. $2.98. Looks like an exceptional bargain.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Not at all.
Outside the store, our view zips down the street to the nearby Gimbel's. Now inside the executive offices.
And why didn't one of you think of this idea? It's the greatest goodwill policy I ever heard of. Every shopper in New York City suddenly thinks of Macy as a benevolent soul, thinking only of the welfare of the public. And what does that make Gimbel? Nothing but a profiteering money grubber. Well, two can play at this game. From now on, if we haven't got what the customer wants, send him back to Macy's. And what's more, we'll do the same thing in our stores in Philadelphia, Milwaukee, and Pittsburgh. Now get to work on it right away.
Back at Macy's.
So, Gimbel's doing it in Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Milwaukee, eh?
Yes, and very successfully.
Well, we can cover the country, too. Notify our stores in San Francisco, Atlanta, Toledo, and Newark to get going right away.
All right. Mr. Macy.
A press conference.
Look this way, Mr. Gimbel. Hold it, Mr. Gimbel.
Photographers snap pictures of Gimbel, Macy, and Chris.
Now we'll take some at my store.
Just a minute. I have something I'd like to give our friend here. This is just a little something to show my appreciation for all you've done.
Thank you, Mr. Macy.
Macy hands him a check.
Ooh, that's very kind of you.
I didn't think you were that generous. That's a bit of money. What are you going to do with it?
Well, I have a friend, a doctor. He's been very kind to me. He needs an X-ray machine.
Oh, I don't think that's going to be enough. But I'd better give you some...
I'll make up the difference.
Buy it through the store and get 10% discount.
I can get it for cost.
Nighttime. Cleo tucks Susan into bed as Chris watches.
Good night, Susan.
Now, like me to sing you a little goodnight song?
If you want to.
Doesn't your mother ever sing to you at night?
Mm-mm. Why should she?
No, no reason. I just think it's kind of nice. Do you like market?
All right.
To market, to buy a fat pig. Home again, jiggity jig. To market, to buy a fat hog. Home again, jiggity.
Susan blows a big bubble with her gum. Chris eyes her curiously.
Amazing. Do you happen to have a spare piece?
Mm-hmm.
She reaches into her dresser. Moments later, Chris chews a piece, working his jaws mightily. His long white beard bobs with each chomp.
Well, here goes.
Susan stares up at him with a fascinated gaze. As her mouth falls open, her eyes grow wider and wider. She cringes, squeezing her eyes shut.
Oh!
Later, Chris stands in front of a mirror, picking specks of gum out of his beard with tweezers. Daytime in the Macy's cafeteria. Chris strolls over to a table with his lunch tray, where Alfred, the teenaged worker, sits glumly.
Hello, Alfred.
Hello, Chris.
How about a little game of checkers after lunch, eh?
Leave us not today, Chris. I don't feel like it.
Oh, what's the matter?
Nothing.
Well, something is wrong. What is it?
Well, remember I was telling you how I like to play Santa Claus over at the Y on Christmas and give out packages to the young kids?
Yeah.
Well, I was telling that to Mr. Sawyer, see, and... Well, he says that's very bad.
Sawyer, you mean,
He pretends to bite his nails.
He's a psychologist, you know.
Well, that's a debatable point. Why is it bad, does he say?
Oh, sure. He says that guys who dress up like Santa Claus, see, and give presents away, do it because when they was young, they must have did something bad, and they feel guilty about it. So now they do something they think is good to make up for it, see? It's what he calls a guilt complex.
Chris frowns.
How old are you, Alfred?
17.
17. It doesn't seem to me that you've had time to be guilty of anything much except overeating.
It's nothing to laugh about, Chris. It's pretty serious, he says.
It's a lot of rubbish, Alfred. Don't listen to it.
Oh, he knows what he's talking about. He's been studying that stuff for a long time.
Oh, well, what's the basis of this guilt complex you're supposed to have? Does he say that?
Well, he ain't found out yet. It's probably way down inside of me someplace, see? Maybe something that happened to me when I was a baby, he says. It takes time, but he'll do it, he says.
You mean you're going to him again?
Oh, sure, I go every day for a little while after I finish my lunch. Oh, he don't soak me nothing. He's doing it for free because I'm an interesting case.
Yes. What else has he found wrong with you, Alfred? Anything else?
No. Oh, just that I hate my father. I didn't know it, but he says I do.
And he sees you every day?
Yeah, I just sit in a chair and say anything that comes into my head.
Excuse me, Alfred. A few things have just come into my head, and I'm going to say them.
He wipes his mouth furiously with a napkin, then strides out. Upstairs in his office, Sawyer hangs up his coat, then tugs his eyebrow. Chris flings open the door.
What do you mean, bursting into my office like this?
Are you a licensed psychiatrist?
What business is it of yours?
I have great respect for psychiatry and great contempt for meddling amateurs who go around practicing it. You have no more right to analyze Alfred than a dentist has to remove a gallbladder.
I beg your pardon.
Your job here, I understand, is to give intelligence tests. Passing yourself off as a psychologist. You ought to be horsewhipped. Taking a normal, impressionable boy like Alfred and filling him up with complexes and phobias?
I think I'm better equipped to judge that than you are.
Just because the boy wants to be good and kind to children, you tell him he has a guilt complex.
Having the same delusion you couldn't possibly understand. The boy is definitely maladjusted and I'm helping.
Maladjusted? You talk about maladjusted. Seems to me that the patient is running the clinic.
I won't step. Leave this office immediately.
Now, either you stop analyzing Alfred or I go straight to Mr. Macy and tell him what a malicious, contemptible fraud you are.
Get out before I have you thrown out.
There's only one way to handle a man like you.
You won't listen to reason. You're heartless. You have no humanity.
Are you going to leave?
Yes.
Up! He wraps Sawyer on the forehead with an umbrella, then heads out. As Doris and Shellhammer approach, Sawyer feigns unconsciousness.
Chris!
Mr. Sawyer!
Mr. Sawyer! Mr. Sawyer, are you all right?
Look at that bump! Mr. Sawyer! He's unconscious. Better get a wet towel.
No, better get a doctor.
Mr. Sawyer!
Later.
But you must have done something to him.
I tell you, we were merely talking. But the moment I mentioned Santa Claus, the moment I attacked his delusion, he became violent. I told you he had latent maniacal tendencies. Well, I think this proves it.
Maybe we better have Dr. Pierce give him another examination.
Dr. Pierce? He doesn't know anything about this sort of thing. He's a general practitioner.
You must admit this is rather serious. Perhaps we better get a competent psychiatrist.
But he's taken dozens of those examinations and passed them all 100%.
Well, in view of this, it's possible his condition has changed.
I don't think we can take any chances, really, I don't. I can't see any harm in it. If he passes the test, he can return to work immediately. And if he doesn't, well, it's better we find out.
And you better have the examination right away, before he tells before Mr. Macy finds out.
Oh, yes. Oh, my, yes. You explain to Mr. Kringle. After all, you're a friend of his.
I won't do it. I can't do it. I've grown very fond of him, and this would be like coming out and telling him that I thought he was insane.
Well, you don't call this acting normal, do you?
Of course I don't. But there are thousands of other old people who aren't normal either. This is going to hurt Chris very deeply, and I don't want to be the one to do it.
She marches out. Near the Santa Claus display, customers mill about as Shellhammer and Sawyer ride up an escalator.
I don't think that'd be very fair to him. I'll tell him the truth. I always believe in being truthful with people.
If he sees me or you mention psychiatrist, it's more or less attacking his delusion again. He's apt to become violent.
But in front of the children? Oh, but that'd be terrible.
Well, you better get him out of the store on some other pretext. Then, once outside, I'll explain it to him.
All right. If you think that it's better that way.
Shellhammer heads for the display.
Please keep a straight line all day long to see Santa Claus.
Sawyer puts on his hat.
Up!
Then quickly removes it. Shellhammer approaches Chris.
Mr. Kringle.
Yeah?
Mrs. Walker wanted me to tell you that we're going to take some publicity pictures this afternoon down at the City Hall. You and the mayor.
Good. Like to meet him. A few things I'd like to talk over with him. Oh, but I'd made an appointment with Mr. Macy at 4 o'clock. Want to tell him about something.
Well, you'll be back in plenty of time. Now, there's a car waiting for you downstairs, and it's starting to drizzle. You'll need a coat. I'll get it.
Thanks. I'll be right with you. Just want to take care of a few of these kiddies first.
Shellhammer pats him on the shoulder. Several feet away, Sawyer places a sign near the end of the line. It reads, "We'll be back in a little while. I'm feeding my reindeer." Signed, Santa Claus. A little later, a worker escorts Chris out of the store to a waiting car. They climb into the back seat. Standing off to the side, Sawyer hops into the front. The driver turns to him.
Where to? Bellevue.
Bellevue!
Chris struggles to open the door. The worker holds him back. As they pull away from the curb, a look of fear creeps across Chris's face.
Did she know about this?
Yes. We all discussed it.
With a furrowed brow, Chris's mouth droops. Now, in a law office, Fred grips a dictaphone.
The second party shall, in consideration of the property hereby agreed to be conveyed by the first party to the second party. Excuse me, Gertrude. Telephone. Hello. Yes? Yes? Why, yes, we share an apartment together. Bellevue. But why, Doctor? What did he...
Oh, he's quite comfortable. He's going to be with us for a few days, and he was wondering if you could bring over his personal things. Yes. Yes, in view of his examination, I'm afraid I shall have to recommend commitment. Yes, I know, Mr. Gailey, but I'd rather speak to you in person.
I'll be right over, Doctor.
Now in a hospital ward. Fred stands outside a locked door with an orderly.
See the new patient.
Thanks.
Not at all.
Another orderly opens it up and lets Fred into a lounge area. The lawyer strolls over to Chris, who sits frowning, slumped in a wheelchair.
Hello, Chris.
Fred.
Why'd you do it, Chris? You deliberately failed that examination, didn't you?
He pulls up a chair.
Why?
Why? Because the last few days I've had great hope. I had a feeling Doris was beginning to believe in me.
And now I find out she was only just humoring me all the time.
But I just talked to her on the phone. She didn't know anything about the taking pictures with the mayor. That was Sawyer's idea.
Hmm? Well, I'm glad of that. But why didn't she come to me and explain the whole thing?
She didn't want to hurt you.
But only because I was a nice, kind old man and she was sorry for me.
That's not true.
Yes, it is. She had doubts. That's why she was just sorry. If you'd been dragged off here instead of me, she wouldn't have been sorry. She'd have been furious.
All right, she had doubts. Why not? She hasn't really believed in anything for years. You can't expect her to suddenly...
Oh, it's not just Doris. There's Mr. Sawyer. He's contemptible, dishonest, selfish, deceitful, vicious. And yet he's out there and I'm in here. He's called normal and I'm not. But if that's normal, I don't want it. That's why I answered the questions incorrectly.
But, Chris, you can't just think of yourself. What happens to you matters to a lot of other people. People like me who believe in what you stand for. And people like Susie who are just beginning to. You can't quit. You can't let them down.
No, I suppose I shouldn't.
Who knows? Maybe someday the Sawyers will be in here instead of out there.
You're right. I ought to be ashamed of myself. Even if we can't win, we can go down swinging. Let's get out of here.
Now, wait a minute. You're forgetting. You flunked your examination, but good.
Oh, yes. I forgot. I said Calvin Coolidge was the first president. I can imagine what they're thinking of me for saying that. But you'll get me out of this. You'll think of something.
It's not going to be easy, Chris.
Oh, it will be for you. I believe you're the greatest lawyer since Darrow.
Just a second, Chris. You're putting me in an awful spot.
But I believe in you. You can't let me down.
But you don't understand it.
Chris beams at him.
I'll do everything I can, Chris.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Now Sawyer sits in Macy's office, tugging his eyebrow.
That's a lot of nonsense. Dangerous, my foot. I don't care if he failed 10 examinations. You had no right to do it. Now you get the case dropped tomorrow, or you might have another lump to match the one that Chris gave you.
Yes, Mr. Macy.
Now we briefly glimpse an office door. A nameplate reads, Mr. Justice Henry X. Harper. Inside, a 60-ish gray-haired man reads a petition. It states, in the matter of an application for the certification of Chris Kringle.
Age unknown. Old man, huh?
Very old, Your Honor.
A mustached man.
I suppose I'll have to read all this.
Take my word for it. Just routine commitment papers, cut and dried. The man calls himself Chris Kringle. Thinks he's Santa Claus.
Uh-oh.
The judge reaches for a pen.
Come in.
Mr. Gailey to see you, Your Honor. He represents Mr. Kringle.
Better show him in.
Good morning. Your Honor, there seems to be undue haste in this case. I wish to protect my client's rights, as I'm sure you do.
Of course, of course.
If Your Honor please, I request a formal hearing to which I may bring witnesses.
I thought you said this was cut and dry.
That's what I was told. I didn't know anything about a protest.
Of course, you may sign the commitment papers now if you wish, Your Honor, but I shall bring in a habeas corpus this afternoon.
There's no point in signing. We'll have a hearing on Monday morning at 10 o'clock.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good day.
Fred leaves through the outer office, where Sawyer sits in a corner.
Thank you.
Sawyer nervously watches him walk out, then rises as the thinly mustached man comes out.
That man, I heard him say something about Mr. Kringle before. Who is he?
His name is Gailey, Kringle's lawyer. Probably grabbed the case to get some cheap publicity.
Publicity? Oh, we can't have that, Mr. Mara. As a matter of fact, Mr. Macy would rather drop the whole thing right now.
Well, it can't be done. It's too late now. Kringle has been examined by psychiatrists of a city hospital. It has to go through the regular routine.
Oh, we must avoid publicity.
He quickly rushes out. Moments later, in the lobby of the court building, Sawyer approaches Fred and taps him on the shoulder.
Mr. Gailey? I represent Mr. Macy. My name's Sawyer.
Oh, so you're Sawyer.
Yes. Now, regarding this Kringle matter, we're very anxious to avoid publicity of any kind.
Naturally.
So, if you would agree to put this matter through quietly, I'm sure we could find some generous way of expressing our appreciation.
Very interesting.
Then you'll cooperate?
Very interesting. Publicity, You know, that's not a bad idea. You know, if I'm going to win this case, I'm going to have public opinion and plenty of it. And publicity's just the way to do it.
He flashes a smile.
Thanks, Mr. Sawyer.
And turns away.
Oh, Mr. Gailey.
Mr. Gailey, one moment, please.
Fred saunters toward a nearby press room. Watching him go, Sawyer tugs his eyebrow. Now a headline blares, doctors doubt sanity of Santa who launched goodwill campaign. Another reads, Macy Santa has lunacy hearing. A third exclaims, Kris Kringle crazy, court case coming. Calamity, cry kiddies, each word beginning with K. Now Judge Harper reads a paper while a balding man smokes a cigar.
I don't see what they're making such a fuss about. After all, he's an old man.
How are you feeling lately, Henry? You look a little run down.
Me? What? Why, I feel fine. Never better.
Why don't you go and see the doc? Take a few weeks off. Go fishing. Go hunting. Go any place.
Why should I?
Because this Kringle case is dynamite. Let some judge handle it that isn't coming up for re-election.
I can't do that.
Henry, listen. I'm no legal brain trust. I don't know a habeas from a corpus. But I do know politics. That's my racket. I got you elected, didn't I? And I'm going to try to get you reelected.
I know, Charlie. Now, don't misunderstand me. I appreciate everything that you've done for me.
And I'm telling you, get off this case.
But why?
Because you're a regular Pontius Pilate the minute you start. That's why.
Oh, I don't believe it. I'm an honest man, and nobody's going to hold it against me for doing my duty as I see it.
Grandma! Two young kids run into the living room, dashing past.
Good night, Terry. Good night, Alice. Now, straight to bed. I promised your mother you'd be in bed by 8 o'clock, and it's way past.
Aren't you coming, too?
Mm-hmm. I'll be up in a minute to tuck you in. Now, scoot.
Now, how about a great big kiss for Grandpa,
They march by with glares and pouts.
A fine way to treat their grandfather. No hug, no kiss, no anything.
I don't blame them. Any man who puts Santa Claus on trial for lunacy.
See what I mean?
Daytime. The balding Charlie enters a courtroom smoking.
Hey.
A bailiff points to his cigar. The politico taps it out, then sticks it back into his mouth. He finds a seat as Sawyer confers with a thinly mustached D.A. Mara. At the defense table, Kris sits with Fred. An older couple leans over them with comforting looks.
Oh, don't worry about me. I've got the best lawyer in the world.
How long do you think this will take?
Maybe a week.
A week? But that seems impossible. All that has to be done is...
Look, you don't think that lawyer's going to be stupid enough to let him admit anything, do you? He's naturally going to deny everything. And I'll bring witnesses, and he'll bring witnesses.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business with the special term, Part 3 of the Supreme Court, held in and for the County of New York. Draw near and give your attendance, and ye shall be heard.
Mara approaches the judge's bench.
In the matter of Kris Kringle, Your Honor... The commitment papers are before you. Your Honor, please, I should like to call the first witness. Mr. Kringle, will you take the stand?
As Kris rises, Fred pats his hand. Kringle confidently strolls toward the stand. Judge Harper throws him a smile of encouragement. In the spectator section, Charlie winces.
Good morning, Your Honor.
You do solemnly swear that the testimony you are about to give in the cause before this court shall be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Before you begin, Mr. Mara, I want to explain to the witness that this is a hearing, not a trial. Mr. Kringle, you don't have to answer any questions against your wishes or even testify at all.
We have no objection, Your Honor.
Oh, I'll be glad to answer any questions that I can.
What is your name?
Kris Kringle.
Where do you live?
That's what this hearing will decide.
Fred smiles. Reporters take notes.
A very sound answer, Mr. Kringle.
Do you believe that you're Santa Claus?
Of course.
Mara starts to speak, then smiles smugly.
State rest, Your Honor.
As he turns away, a troubled Harper looks to Charlie for support. His friend nods disapprovingly.
Well, Mr. Gailey, do you wish to cross-examine the witness? I believe he was employed to play Santa Claus. Perhaps he didn't understand the question correctly.
Oh, I understood the question perfectly, Your Honor.
Harper blanches with a look of distaste.
No further questions at this time.
Harper turns back to Kris.
Thank you.
Kringle rises to return to his seat.
In view of this statement, do you still wish to put in a defense, young man?
I do, Your Honor. I'm fully aware of my client's opinions. In fact, that's the entire case against him. All these complicated tests and reports boil down to this. Mr. Kringle is not sane because he believes himself to be Santa Claus.
An entirely logical and reasonable assumption, I'm afraid.
It would be if the clerk here, or Mr. Mara, or I believed that we were Santa Claus.
Anyone who thinks he's Santa Claus is not sane.
Not necessarily. You believe yourself to be Judge Harper, yet no one questions your sanity because you are Judge Harper.
I know all about myself, young man. Mr. Kringle is the subject of this hearing.
Yes, Your Honor. And if he is the person he believes himself to be, just as you are, then he's just as sane.
Granted, but he isn't.
Oh, but he is, Your Honor.
Is what?
I intend to prove that Mr. Kringle is Santa Claus.
He's crazy, too.
Awestruck, Mara points to Fred. Pandemonium erupts as photographers snap Chris's picture. Charlie glares at Harper. Now, in her apartment, Doris answers the door, holding a newspaper.
Hello.
Sorry I'm late. Get your coat. I reserved a regular table at Luigi's. We're going to celebrate.
What are we celebrating?
Read all about it. Danny throws bombshell in New York Supreme Court.
Yes, I read that.
Oh, I didn't see this. Front page. Good, good.
You're not serious about this.
Of course I am.
But you can't possibly prove that he's Santa Claus.
Why not? You saw Macy and Gimble shaking hands. That wasn't possible either, but it happened.
Honestly,
Fred. It's the best defense I can use. Completely logical and completely unexpected.
And completely idiotic. What about your bosses, Hayslip and McKenzie and the rest of them? What do they say?
That I am jeopardizing the prestige and dignity of an old established law firm. And either I drop this impossible case immediately, or they will drop me.
See?
I beat them to it. I quit.
Fred, you didn't.
Of course I did. I can't let Chris down. He needs me, and all the rest of us need him.
Look, darling, he's a nice old man, and I admire you for wanting to help him. But you've got to be realistic and face facts. You can't just throw your career away because of a sentimental whim.
But I am not throwing my career away.
But if Hayslip feels that way, so will every other law firm in town.
I'm sure they will. Then I'll open my own office.
And what kind of cases will you get?
Oh, probably a lot of people like Chris that are being pushed around. That's the only fun in law anyway. I promise you, if you believe in me and have faith in me, everything will...
She walks to the other side of the room.
You don't have any faith in me, do you?
It's not a question of faith, it's just common sense.
Faith is believing in things when common sense tells you not to. Oh. Don't you see, it's not just Chris that's on trial, it's everything he stands for. It's kindness,
Fred,
and joy and love and all the other intangibles.
Oh, Fred, you're talking like a child. You're living in a realistic world, and those lovely intangibles of yours are attractive but not worth very much. You don't get ahead that way.
That all depends on what you call getting ahead. Evidently, you and I have different definitions.
These last few days, we've talked about some wonderful plans. And then you go on an idealistic binge. You give up your job, you throw away all your security, and then you expect me to be happy about it.
Yes, I guess I expected too much. Look, Doris, someday you're going to find out that your way of facing this realistic world just doesn't work. And when you do, don't overlook those lovely intangibles. You'll discover they're the only things that are worthwhile.
He strides out. Now, in Mara's living room, the DA reads a paper while his wife and son wrap Christmas presents.
These reporters make me look like a sadistic monster who likes to drown cats and tear the wings off butterflies. Why, this old man is...
Oh, Tommy, go in and get Mother's scissors, will you? They're in the bedroom. That's a good boy. I don't want you to discuss this case in front of him. It would break his heart. And while we're on the subject, I agree with the reporters. Mr. Kringle seems to be a nice old man, and I don't see why you have to keep persecuting him.
Firstly, I am not persecuting him. I am prosecuting him. And secondly, I like the old man, too. Wish I'd never gotten into this. But it's too late now, and there's nothing I can do about it. It's up to the state of New York, and I'm just their duly appointed legal representative. Kringle has been declared a menace to society by competent doctors, and it's my duty to protect the state of New York and see that he's put away. No matter what they may say about me, I've got to do it.
Sometimes I wish I'd married a butcher or plumber.
Well, my dear, if I lose this case, it's very possible that you'll get your wish.
Daytime. We briefly glimpse the columned entrance of the courthouse. Inside, an officer leads Chris through the lobby. Approaching the elevator bank, they find Alfred waiting.
Hello, Chris.
Kringle smiles slightly, pats the boy on the back, and guides him into an elevator. Later in the courtroom, a witness takes the stand with his back to us. Fred strides over to him.
Your name?
R.H. Macy.
You are the owner of one of the biggest department stores in New York City?
The biggest.
Mr. Macy, if you recognize the gentleman seated there, will you tell us who he is?
Kris Kringle.
Your employee, is he not?
Yes.
Do you believe him to be truthful?
Yes.
Do you believe him to be of sound mind?
I certainly do.
Mr. Macy, you're under oath. Do you really believe that this man is Santa Claus?
Well, I...
In his mind's eye, a headline flashes. Macy admits his Santa Claus a fraud.
Well, he gives every indication...
I asked you, Mr. Macy, do you really believe that this man is Santa Claus?
Macy has a vision of smiling children and Kris waving from his sleigh in the Thanksgiving Day parade.
I do.
Kris's eyes shine. Judge Harper raises his eyebrows at Charlie. In the spectator section, the Politico smirks. Stepping down, Macy walks over to Sawyer.
Psychologist. Where'd you graduate from? A correspondence school? You're fired.
Your Honor, I object to this testimony. It's ridiculous, irrelevant, and immaterial. Mr. Gailey is making a circus out of this court. There is no such person as Santa Claus, and everybody knows it.
Your Honor, I submit it's purely a matter of opinion. Can Mr. Mara offer any proof that there is no Santa Claus?
No, and I do not intend to. This is not a nursery. It's the New York State Supreme Court, and I'll not waste this court's time with such childish nonsense.
Mr. Mara seems to have appointed himself the judge here, Your Honor. He's now ruling on what testimony I may introduce.
Your Honor, we request an immediate ruling from this court. Is there or is there not a Santa Claus?
Well...
From his seat, Charlie points his cigar at Harper. The judge nods knowingly.
The court will take a short recess to consider the matter.
Moments later, in the judge's chambers.
I don't care what you do with old Whisker Puss. But if you go back in there and rule that there's no Santa Claus, you better start looking for that chicken farm right now. Why, we won't even be able to put you in the primaries.
But, Charlie, listen to reason. I'm a responsible judge. I've taken an oath. How can I seriously rule that there is a Santa Claus?
Why don't you All right. You go back and tell him that the New York State Supreme Court rules there's no Santa Claus. It's all over the papers. The kids read it and they don't hang up their stockings. Now, what happens to all the toys that are supposed to be in those stockings? Nobody buys them. The toy manufacturers are going to like that. So they have to lay off a lot of their employees, union employees. Now you got the CIO and the AFL against you. And they're going to adore you for it. And they're going to say it with votes. Oh, and the department stores are going to love you too. And the Christmas card makers. And the candy companies. Oh, Henry, you're going to be an awful popular fella. And what about the Salvation Army? Why, they got a Santa Claus on every corner. And they take in a fortune. But you go ahead, Henry. You do it your way. You go on back in there and tell them that you rule there's no Santa Claus. Go on. But if you do, remember this. You can count on getting just two votes, your own, and that district attorney's out there.
The district attorney's a Republican.
All right.
A long-faced Harper opens his door and steps back into the courtroom. Glancing at the defense table, he takes his seat. He starts to speak, then sits up straight, assuming a confident posture.
Before making a ruling, this court has consulted the highest authority available.
Mara shoots a look at his assistant.
The question of Santa Claus seems to be largely a matter of opinion. Many people firmly believe in him. Others do not. The tradition of American justice demands a broad and unprejudiced view of such a controversial matter. This court, therefore, intends to keep an open mind. We shall hear evidence on either side.
He's crazy, too.
Mara rises.
Your Honor, the burden of proof for this ridiculous contention clearly rests with my opponent. Can he produce any evidence to support his views?
If Your Honor please, I can. Will Thomas Mara please take the stand?
Who, me?
Thomas Mara, Jr.
The young, curly-haired boy rises and heads for the stand. Mara looks to his wife. She shrugs and holds up a subpoena. The DA's mouth droops.
Hello, Daddy.
Here, Tommy.
Fred lifts the boy into the witness chair.
Tommy, you know the difference between telling the truth and telling a lie, don't you?
Gosh, everybody knows you shouldn't tell a lie, especially in court.
Proceed, Mr. Gailey.
Do you believe in Santa Claus, Tommy?
Sure I do. He gave me a brand new flexible flyer sled last year, and this year...
And, what does he look like?
There he is, sitting there.
Your Honor, I protest.
Overruled.
Tell me, Tommy, why are you so sure there's a Santa Claus?
Because my daddy told me so. Didn't you, Daddy?
Mara nods reluctantly.
And you believe your daddy, don't you, Tommy? He's a very honest man.
Of course he is. My daddy wouldn't tell me anything that wasn't so. Would you, Dad?
Mara shakes his head.
Thank you, Tommy.
Fred helps him out of the chair.
Goodbye, Daddy.
He heads for Chris.
Your Honor.
Don't forget a real official football helmet.
Don't worry, Tommy. You'll get it.
Beaming, the boy walks over to his mother. She places her hand on his neck. Sighing, Mara frowns. Tommy waves goodbye to his father. Mara nods, raising one eyebrow. The DA turns back to Judge Harper.
Your Honor, the state of New York concedes the existence of Santa Claus.
As Mrs. Mara leads Tommy out, Charlie enters the courtroom.
But in so conceding, we ask that Mr. Gailey cease presenting personal opinion as evidence. The state could bring in hundreds of witnesses with opposite opinions. But it's our desire to shorten this hearing rather than prolong it. I therefore request that Mr. Gailey now submit authoritative proof that Mr. Kringle is the one and only Santa Claus.
Your point's well taken, Mr. Mara. I'm afraid we must agree.
Clenching his stogie between his lips, Charlie nods his assent.
Mr. Gailey, are you prepared to show that Mr. Kringle is Santa Claus on the basis of competent authority?
Not at this time, Your Honor. I ask for an adjournment until tomorrow.
The court stands adjourned till tomorrow afternoon at 3:00.
Alfred sits beside Doris with a woeful expression.
Well, I guess that's that.
There's a way, Alfred. There's got to be.
Later, at home, Doris pulls Susan into her lap.
Well, it's hard to explain. You see, they're having, well, sort of a trial about him.
You mean like for a murder?
Oh, no, no, it isn't that kind of a trial. It's just because he says he's Santa Claus.
But I've got a feeling he is Santa Claus, Mother.
Some people don't believe that. That's why they're having
this... But he's so kind and nice and jolly. He's not like anyone else. He must be Santa.
I think perhaps you're right, Susie.
Is Mr. Kringle sad now, Mother?
I'm afraid he is. I'm sure he misses you and...
Then I'm going to write him a letter right now and cheer him up.
Doris tweaks the little girl's chin. Susan hops out of her lap. Now a child's handwritten letter reads, "Dear Mr. Kringle, my mother says you are sad. Now I am writing to you because I want you to be happy again and to tell you that I believe all you told me and everything will turn out fine. I even believe you will get me the present I asked for. I hope you are not sad. Yours truly, Susan." Both times, believe has an extra E. Doris gazes up from the note with a warm smile. She grabs a pen and jots at the bottom, "I believe in you too, Doris." Later in the hallway, she licks an envelope and drops the letter into a mail slot. Now in the post office, workers sort mail. Batches of letters fall from vents onto a large table as men shift through them, separating the pieces. They drop some letters into slots on one side of the table and hurl others onto a conveyor belt above their heads. One workman finds an envelope addressed to Chris Kringle, New York County Courthouse, Center and Pearl Streets, New York City. Reading it, he chuckles.
Hey, Lou! Come here!
Yeah.
Hey, here's a new one.
I seen him ride to Santa Claus, North Pole, South Pole, and every other place. Here's a kid writes, Kris Kringle, New York County Courthouse. Can you beat that?
The kid's right. Yeah? They got him on trial down there. He claims that he's Santa Claus, and the DA claims that he's nuts. Here, read it for yourself, right on the front page.
Lou shows the workman a newspaper.
Hey, Lou, how many Santa Claus letters we got down at the dead letter office?
I don't know. There must be about 50,000 of them. Bags and bags all over the joint, and there's more coming in every day.
Yeah. Hey, Lou.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of nice to get rid of them, wouldn't it, huh?
Yeah, but... Hey, that's a wonderful idea, hey,
I mean, after all, why should we be bothered with all that stuff, huh? Why don't you get a couple of trucks up here, big ones, right away? Load them with all that Santa Claus mail and deliver it to Mr. Kringle down at the courthouse. Let somebody else worry about it, huh?
That's right, sir.
Hey, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle bell, Louis.
Now in the courtroom, a huge crowd gathers in the spectators section. At the defense table, a smiling Kris reads Susan's letter. Fred enters with a stricken look and pats the older man on the shoulder.
Hello, Kris.
Fred.
Kris, I'm afraid I've got bad news for you. I've tried every way to get some competent authority. I've wired the governor, the mayor. I even...
This is worth more to me than all the governors and mayors in the world.
It's all over, George. Look at him. He hasn't got a thing.
As Maris sits beside his assistant, a bailiff enters and comes over to Fred. They converse for a moment, and the man stretches out his arms wide. Fred reluctantly rises and follows him out. Later, he's still gone as Mara addresses the court.
And furthermore, the defense has yet to offer one concrete piece of evidence to substantiate this preposterous claim. Not one competent authoritative proof that this man is Santa Claus.
Fred enters.
In view of these facts, and especially since today is Christmas Eve, we're naturally all anxious to get to our homes, I ask that you sign the commitment papers without further delay.
Mr. Gailey, have you anything further to offer?
Yes, I have, Your Honor. I'd like to submit the following facts and evidence. It concerns the Post Office Department, an official agency of the United States government.
He reads.
The Post Office Department was created by the Second Continental Congress on July 26, 1776. The first Postmaster General was Benjamin Franklin. The Post Office Department is one of the largest business concerns in the world. Last year, under Robert Hannigan, it did a gross business of $1,112,877,174.
Your Honor, I'm sure we're all gratified to know that the Post Office Department is doing so nicely, but it hardly has any bearing on this case.
It has a great deal, Your Honor, if I may be allowed to proceed.
By all means, Mr. Gailey.
Harper squirms expectantly.
Your Honor, the figures I have just quoted indicate an efficiently run organization. Furthermore, the United States postal laws and regulations make it a criminal offense to willfully misdirect mail or intentionally deliver it to the wrong party. Consequently, the department uses every possible precaution.
Your Honor, the state of New York is second to none in its admiration of the Post Office Department. It is efficient, authoritative, and prosperous. We are very happy to concede Mr. Gailey's claims.
For the record, Mr. Mara?
For the record. Anything to get on with this case.
Then, Your Honor, I want to introduce these pieces of evidence.
I'll take them, please.
I have here three letters. They're addressed simply Santa Claus. No other address whatsoever. Yet these letters have just now been delivered to Mr. Kringle by bona fide employees of the post office. I offer them as positive proof that a competent...
Three letters, Your Honor, are hardly positive proof. I understand the post office receives thousands of these letters every year.
I have further exhibits, Your Honor, but I hesitate to produce them.
Oh, I'm sure we'll be very happy to see them.
Yes, yes, yes. Produce them, Mr. Gailey. Put them here on my desk.
But, Your Honor...
Put them here on the desk. Put them...
Yes, Your Honor.
Fred gestures to two bailiffs at the double doors in the back of the courtroom. They open them up. 10 more bailiffs enter in single file. Each totes two large mail bags, one over the shoulder, the second dragging behind. As the first two men start to close the doors, an 11th bailiff rushes in, carrying an extra bag. The men begin to dump out the letters on the judge's bench. Spectators titter.
Your Honor!
Thousands of letters spill onto the desk, nearly burying Judge Harper. Chris's face lights up with glee, his eyes twinkling. Doris, Alfred, and Shellhammer giggle delightedly.
Your Honor, every one of these letters is addressed to Santa Claus. The post office has delivered them. Therefore, the Post Office Department, a branch of the federal government, recognizes this man, Kris Kringle, to be the one and only Santa Claus.
Harper sweeps out from under the pile on his desk.
Since the United States government declares this man to be Santa Claus, this court will not dispute it. Case dismissed.
Fred rushes over to Chris. They embrace. Harper glances at Charlie. His friend nods his approval. Mara checks his watch.
I've got to get that football helmet.
He dashes out. Flashbulbs pop as Chris poses for photos, then approaches the bench.
Thank you so much, Your Honor, and a very Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you, Mr. Kringle, and the same to you.
Thank you.
Nighttime. Chris stands outside the courthouse. As he waits beside a column, shadows fill the entryway. Doris exits with Fred and strides over to Chris. She takes his hand.
Chris.
I had to wait to tell you. I got your note. It made me very happy.
Oh, I'm so glad.
We're having a big Christmas party at the Brooks home tomorrow morning. Breakfast, a beautiful tree, and I'd like to have you and Susan.
Oh, thank you. I can't think of anyone I'd rather spend Christmas with. Would you like to come to dinner tonight?
Tonight? Oh, I can't. It's Christmas Eve.
Oh, I forgot.
Bye.
Tipping his hat, he strolls off. She gazes after him with a fond expression. Daytime. Fred, Doris, and Susan enter a large nursing home. Inside, a plump woman steps into a brightly lit sitting room and turns on a record player. A Christmas tree stands in the corner, surrounded by presents. Dressed in Santa Claus costumes, Alfred and Chris lead in guests. Kringle shakes Macy's hand.
Yes, you know my assistant, Alfred, Mr. Macy.
Merry Christmas, Alfred.
Mr.
Shellhammer, there's something here I'd like to show you.
Mr. Macy.
As Doris smiles beside him, Alfred gazes after his employer in awe. While Susan excitedly shifts through presents under the tree, Dr. Pierce walks over to an X-ray machine, decorated with a large bow. Chris saunters up to him.
Chris, all I can say is the state Supreme Court declared you to be Santa Claus, and personally and professionally, I agree with them.
Nearby, Susan stands glumly beside her mother.
But there are lots of presents there for you, darling.
Not the one I wanted. Not the one Mr. Kringle was going to get for me.
Well, what was that?
It doesn't matter. I didn't get it. I knew it wouldn't be here, but I thought there'd be a letter or something telling me.
I don't suppose you even want to talk to me.
It's something about a present.
Yes, I know. I'm sorry, Susie. I tried my best, but...
You couldn't get it because you're not Santa Claus, that's why. You're just a nice old man with whiskers, like my mother said. And I shouldn't have believed you.
Chris hangs his head.
I was wrong when I told you that, Susie. You must believe in Mr. Kringle and keep right on doing it. You must have faith in him.
But he didn't get me the... That doesn't make sense, Mommy.
Faith is believing in things when common sense tells you not to.
Huh?
I mean, just because things don't turn out the way you want them to the first time, you've still got to believe in people. I found that out.
You mean it's like, if at first you don't succeed, try again.
Yes.
I thought so.
Later, Dara stands at the door in her coat.
May I drive you home?
Thank you.
Now, if you'll go this way, you'll miss a lot of traffic. I've written it all down. You see, you go along Maplewood until you come to Ashley.
I believe. It's silly, but I believe.
Thanks, Chris. I'll be fine. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. And to you, my dear. And many of them.
Goodbye, my dear.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Miss Walker.
Goodbye,
Alfred.
Goodbye,
Susie.
Now Fred drives them down a suburban street.
This must be the turn here. That's right, Ashley. Now you go straight for four blocks.
I believe.
Glancing out the window, Susan's eyes grow wide.
Stop, Uncle Fred! Stop! Stop! Stop!
As he pulls up to the curb, she hops out.
Susie!
And runs over to a house,
Susie!
Just like the one in her clipping.
Susie, where are you going?
What is she doing? Susie!
Susie!
They follow her inside.
Susie,
where are you?
Susie! Calm right down. You know you shouldn't run around in other people's houses. You know better than that.
But this is my house, Mommy. The one I asked Mr. Kringle for. It is. I know it is. My room upstairs is just like I knew it would be. Oh, you were right, Mommy. Mommy told me if things don't turn out just the way you want them to the first time, you still got to believe. And I kept believing, and you were right, Mommy. Mr. Kringle is Santa Claus.
Where are you going?
To see if there's a swing.
She opens up French doors and goes out.
You told her that?
Doris nods with a guilty look. Fred pulls her into his arms and kisses her deeply on the mouth. Then they draw back slightly.
The sign outside said it's for sale. We can't let her down.
I never really doubted you. It was just my silly common sense.
It even makes sense to believe in me now. I must be a pretty good lawyer. I'd take a little old man and legally prove to the world that he's Santa Claus. Now, you know that...
An object in the corner catches Fred's eye. His brow creases in a puzzled look. Beside the fireplace, a cane leans against the wall.
Oh, no, it can't be. It must have been left here by the people that moved out.
Maybe. Maybe I didn't do such a wonderful thing after all.
Stunned, they gawk at the simple wooden cane. Fade to black. A title reads, The End. This film has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Lisa Benjamin. Descriptions read by Francis Kelly.